Good morning, everyone. It is Thursday, September 7th, 2017, and the first week of the regular season chugs along. The Green Bay Packers will be on the field later today for their only padded practice of the week. It's their most rigorous session before getting ready for Sunday's game. They'll practice again lightly on Saturday, and then, of course, Sunday, 3:25, kickoff is here for week one of the regular season. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and I'm here with Tom Silverstein. Tom, how did you enjoy the cutdown weekend?
Wow, was that an experience? 11 straight hours on the live blog. Where else would you rather be than right on the live blog all day long? It was an interesting cutdown. You know, you didn't have the splash that you had a year ago with Josh Sitton, but you had a lot of intriguing moves at the bottom of the roster, and then some other kind of moves, a trade, a waiver claim, then a free agent signing, and so the roster's really kind of been an amorphous thing where it just, up until right now, it was really always pretty, what would be the word, just sponge-worthy, you know? It was not really firm, but it's firm now.
How are you grading your participants in the live blog? Do they get an A for participation?
They get an A for fortitude, even though fortitude doesn't start with an A, for hanging in there for as long as they did, and me getting cranky for answering all the same questions about PUP versus IR, which I answered like 17 times during the block. But
why isn't Geronimo Allison on the 53-man roster, Tom? How many times did you answer that one?
That one wasn't near as bad as, you know, I didn't get that one much at all. We talked a lot about the number three quarterback. That got a lot of discussion.
So in the end, were you surprised just really quick to see him let Taysom Hill go?
I was. I really thought a number three quarterback versus a seventh cornerback, I'd go for the quarterback all day long. And I still, to this day, don't really know. There wasn't that much difference between Lindsey Pipkins and Donatello Brown. Pipkins plays slot and Brown doesn't, and I think that was the difference. But even so, even if they'd lost Pipkins somewhere else, they have Donatello Brown. So I really still don't understand that, and I don't think McCarthy was happy about losing Hill.
No, I agree. And the one thing that sort of jumped out to me when I thought about this a little bit more is that they had a bunch of corners, seven, as you mentioned, and then they had 10 offensive linemen. And when you think back to last year, those were the two places that they had their most significant injuries. Mm-hmm. Corner was depleted, of course, and then TJ Lang being gone with the broken foot. I wonder, is that at all related, do you think? Is there a correlation between going through a year in corner where they were just strapped for guys, and then, you know, same thing with running back. They only carried two last year, and this year they carry four.
Well, you can't, as they say, you can't have too many cornerbacks. They have a lot of guys who've been injury prone since they've been in the league. House has had a ton of injuries. Demaryius Randall's been hurt. Quentin Rollins has been hurt. So you can understand why they would want to keep another guy, but really, I still don't understand. You know, a guy like Pipkins, I don't know if he's going to help you. You still have Dimitri Goodson who could possibly come back in 6 weeks. So still surprising to me. The offensive line keeping nine was not surprising because, yeah, like you said, they could wind up having to use a bunch of those guys.
Right, and so it started out with 10, and then they put Barkley on IR. So and the reason for that is so that potentially he can come back later.
Correct. If you're on the 53, now this is the thing I explained 107 times in the blog. If you're on the 53-man roster after the cutdown, or 24 hours after the cutdown, you are eligible for injured reserve designated to return. So that's what they did with Barkley. And we thought maybe they would do that with Montrevious Adams, but he kind of surprised us and was on the practice field. What did he do today or yesterday? Did you see much?
Yeah, so let's run through the injuries real quick. Adams, of course, has that foot problem. He had surgery early in training camp. He was limited in practice, but I think that was more precautionary than anything else, because when you looked at him in the individual drills, he moves pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe a little bit of a protective gait, you know, where he can kind of, you know, he's not pushing it, you know, really crazy or anything like that. But it seems to be ahead of schedule from where a lot of people thought he might be at this point in time. You know, and as you mentioned on a previous podcast, if he can come back and give them some interior pass rush, that would be huge, because aside from Mike Daniels, they don't have a ton of guys that are known for their sub-rushing ability.
No. They're going to be counting on Dean Lowry for some of that. Kenny Clark would like to think he could do that, but they're not sold on that yet either. So, yeah, they're going to need some inside pass rush. And Adams would be, if he's as good as they say he is, that would be a huge boost to their defense.
And then the other injuries, you had Devon House, who was limited with a hamstring injury dating back to family night. You had Kevin King with a groin problem that had bothered him off and on toward the second half of camp. And then the big one, Brian Bulaga with the ankle injury, was limited in practice after not practicing on Monday. He looked to be moving pretty well. I didn't see anything to favor, you know, the injured ankle, his right ankle. I didn't see any ridiculous tape jobs or casts or braces or anything to try and fortify that. So at this point, you know, there's still a few days till Sunday, but I'd be surprised if he doesn't give it a go.
No way he doesn't play.
Yeah.
No way. The only way he wouldn't is if there were a setback, if he somehow got hurt in practice. But you know he's going to play. He wants to play. He's going to play.
Just for the sake of argument, you know, after seeing the whole training camp, if he were not to go, do you think they go with Murphy over Spriggs?
Absolutely.
I think
absolutely.
So, too.
Absolutely, yeah. Murphy's their right tackle, hell or high water behind Bulaga, and he gets first crack. If he can't handle it, then Spriggs moves over there, but he's first crack at right tackle.
So let's go back to something that you mentioned in that little brief discussion about the roster. You talked about all the moves that took place after the 53 was mm-hmm. cemented, you know, the waiver claim, bringing in Quentin Dial for a visit, officially announcing Ahmad Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've covered a lot of Ted Thompson teams, all of them. How crazy is this to see this flurry of activity?
It's insane. It's insane completely in the membrane. It's like, I've never seen anything like it. And I, you know, my story today, I broke down the number of guys 30 years and older. They have 9. That's more than Thompson has ever had in the McCarthy era. Their average age is about the same as it usually is in 25, under 26. But the years of experience jumped up huge. In a huge way, they're like 4.25 is years of experience, and they've consistently been in the mid 3.5s. So, you know, let's go through it. You know, even Martellus Bennett, Lance Kendricks, Ricky Jean-Francois, who am I forgetting?
Jari Evans,
Devon House, and now you got Ahmad Brooks, and then they pick up Quentin Dial. Those are all veterans, guys on their second, third, fourth contracts. So it's really – something's changed with Ted.
So two questions. One is, first, why do you think this is happening? And my opinion on this is something that we've talked about before. You mentioned that this is a team that they view as Super Bowl or bust mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. And I almost think that this is – trying to fine-tune the last little tweaks of a roster that they think is pretty darn good, and that rather than sort of sitting with some of the young guys that they could have in there, they're willing to churn the bottom of the roster a little bit more, searching for guys because they think that they're really close. Do you buy that?
Yeah, I do. I think this is their shot, and I think Ted knows that he doesn't have very many shots left, that he's not going to be the GM for all that much longer. And it's time to do something. So I think there's a little bit of desperation there, but I think it's good desperation. I think it's stop waiting for it to happen and chase it a little bit. I've been critical of Ted in free agency, but only in the fact that he does not has not chased the guys like Ricky Jean-Francois, like Ahmad Brooks, guys who have like a year or two left and can give you something, give you experience, give you just enough to get over the hump. And I've thought for the longest that he should have done that. I've never been in favor of signing the big free agent. It just doesn't work. It's rare that it has a huge impact. But these kind of guys do have an impact, I think.
Since I wasn't here when it happened, how surprising was it when they signed Peppers? Because that's sort of this type of move, bringing in him at 35, I think he was.
Yeah, it was. So it was surprising, but it made sense. I had a lot of people telling me, you know, that one would make, before it happened, you know, it would really make a lot of sense for Peppers to go to Green Bay because he fits the system. He's been cut for cap reasons. He's near the end. It's perfect. He'll play a limited role, and that's exactly what's going to happen with all these other guys, except for Jari Evans, who will have to play every down, and Martellus Bennett, who will have to play quite a bit. But even he doesn't have to play that much.
Right.
Hendricks and Richard Rodgers are going to play too. So it's really one of those things where I think they found some good fits.
So the second question about, you know, this latest churn and this latest willingness to expand, I asked you why you think it's happening. We talked about that. Now, where do you think this is coming from? Is this Ted realizing it himself? There's no way to answer this. These are all hypotheticals.
Yeah.
Or do you think that he's listening to people more in the front office that might be in favor of these things?
I think he's letting his personnel guys spread their wings a little. And, you know, when he elevated both Brian Gutekunst and Elliot Wolf after they turned down interviewed with San Francisco, we don't know if they were offered. I think there was a little bit of promise that he would let them do their job and that he would consider them. I don't know this for a fact, but I sense that's what happened. I've heard that from some people, but I don't know that those people are far enough inside. I just think that they were told they would have more influence.
So when you think about this offseason as a whole, as we get ready for week one on Sunday, what kind of a grade do you give Ted? I mean, I got to think this is as productive an offseason as he's had. The only thing that I would knock him on, and this is just personal preference, I guess, is I expected the draft to go a little bit differently than it did in terms of trying to target an edge rusher a little bit earlier, maybe looking for an interior lineman at some point in the later rounds, and I just didn't get the three running backs and two receivers. So that would be my knock, but in terms of his free agency involvement, at least in the years that I've been here, it's the best he's done so far.
Well, it's the best on paper,
right,
that we've seen. You know, this could all fall apart. You know, all these old guys could all get hurt and not be worth anything. But on paper, it seems like it's a good move. And it looks to me like he got some good guys in the locker room, too. If you look at Kendricks, Brooks, and Jean-Francois, I mean, those are like three guys who are no-nonsense players, who they're going to be out there and practice hard every single time. They're all about football, and you know you can count on them. And they'll help the other guys. So those are the kind of solid guys you want. House is like that, too. House is always there to help the younger guys. So they got some solid dudes out of that, too.
I'm really interested to see how everything plays out along this defensive line now, because you look at, you know, Clark, Daniels, and Lowry as the three guys that came into this season, you know, as the breadwinners, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And now you add a Jean-Francois, you have Montrevious Adams, you have Quentin Dial, you have Chris Odom, who played with his hand down all during camp and might be used there in sub packages. How do you sort of see this shaking out in terms of playing time for guys?
Well, I think we talked about a little bit at one point during camp that there was no backup for Kenny Clark. And I think they took care of that with Dial. Now, Dial isn't a natural nose tackle, but he's a 3-4 player, and he's played all really, it's four positions. He can play either end position. He can play a three technique. He can play the nose. And he actually could play like a wide end if you needed him. He's not really that type of player, but he could do it. I think I talked to Ahmad Brooks about him today, and he thought that Dial had a lot left, that playing nose will be a little bit different for him. He hasn't played that consistently, but that he's perfectly capable of playing it. And that takes a lot of pressure off of Clark, because it takes a lot of pressure off the other guys, off of Daniels, off of Francois, off of Lowry. They don't have to line up on the nose, which they were going to have to do when Clark was out of the game. And now you've kind of freed them up a little bit to be more upfield guys and not have to eat up blockers as much.
You know, one of the things that is sort of easy to forget is how recently B.J. Raji was here. I mean, it was only 2 years ago that he was here. And, of course, he was the, prototypical nose tackle in a 3-4 defense. When he had his best season, which I think was the year before I got here, or maybe 2 years before I got here, the one time that he had all those pressures and all those sacks, which is unusual for the nose tackle position, what did that do for some of the other guys on the team? When you can get that pressure up the middle, how does that help everybody else?
Well, the first thing you want to do is prevent pressure up the middle. So if your center's getting beat or your guard is getting beat, then you've got to help them. And when you help the middle, then you're leaving yourself more vulnerable on the edges. And, usually you slide protection to Clay Matthews. You couldn't slide protection because you were worried about Raji getting in. I don't know that they have that type of player. And that was brief for Raji. He didn't show that a lot after that. But that's what they're hoping with Clark, that he can get upfield a little bit. I don't know that they're worried about him drawing double teams. But all they need him to do is eat up blockers and then clear the way for those inside linebackers to make tackles in the run game.
Even just in my time here, the amount of defense, sub-defense the Packers are playing just continues to rise year after year after year. So I've kind of wondered that if you were to take B.J. Raji and put him in this year's draft class, would they even consider taking a guy like that in the first round anymore, given,
the way they play.
The way they play now. I mean, I just don't know if you need that type of guy.
Raji always wanted to play nickel. He always thought he was getting robbed of sacks because they wouldn't play him in the nickel. I do still think you need a big guy. You've got to have someone who can control the center and guard. And I just don't think you can go too light there. So I still think Raji would be an applicable player, even in with as much nickel as they play, because in the nickel, you still have a nose tackle.
Right.
I mean, even though you have two defensive ends, defensive tackles, one of them often plays over the nose or cocked on the nose. And so you've got to have a guy who can still eat up some double teams.
With that in mind, I have to think the Packers were pretty, I don't know if angry is the right word, but peeved that Brian Price got claimed by Dallas. I think that even though he wasn't on the 53, that's a guy they would love to have on the practice squad, just to have at their disposal. And then the guy that they kept over him, Christian Ringo, gets claimed on waivers today by the Bengals. Is that at all significant? Because now all they have on the practice squad is Isaiah Lunsford.
Yeah. Well, you also have to consider, okay, how long are Price and Ringo going to be on the 53?
Very true.
They're going to have to play. They're at the bottom end of those rosters, and it's possible they'll come free again. Dial is 27 years old. He's in his fifth year. it's not, he's not that old. He can still give them, you know, a bunch of years where he can be a factor, if assuming he plays that well. Price and Ringo are still developing players, and I don't think either one is going to be a superstar. So it's part of the risk you take when, especially when you're going for a Super Bowl.
So let's flip sides to the other edge of the coin here and talk about Seattle's front line. You know, this was something that came up today on, yesterday on the conference call with Pete Carroll. He was asked about his front four. You asked the question, and what was his answer when you asked about the quality that they have there?
Well, I asked him, with the addition of Sheldon Richardson, whether he had had some really good front fours over the years. That's what they rely on. But how this one stacked up, and he said, you know, the season still needs to play out, but it's the best he thinks he's ever had. And it is potentially one of the best in the NFL. You've got Michael Bennett on one end, got Cliff Averill. Then you've got Sheldon Richardson and Frank Clark or Jaron Reed. And that's really impressive front. And they can move guys around. Bennett's going to play inside, outside, wherever they want him. Averill still seems to have a lot of pass rush left in him. And Clark is a disruptive player.
It's going to be really interesting to see how the offensive line of the Packers handles that, because they have the new piece, obviously, in Jahri Evans. And when Aaron Rodgers was talking yesterday, he spoke about how, you know, this week in practice is really important for Evans for a couple of reasons, because the things that they do with the cadence and the snap counts and the changes in tempo from no huddle back to regular huddle to this muddle huddle, all the different things that they do, those are things that they do replicate at times in camp, but not to the degree that he's going to experience it this weekend. And so not only are they going to be contending with a very, very impressive front four, but it's going to be a test of continuity for these guys on the right side.
Yeah, it is. I think Evans, he's a veteran. He will have to get used to that no huddle, the hard counts. He's only played a little bit with Rodgers. He's practiced with him, but, you know, in the heat of a game, it's a little different. I think what you're going to see Sunday, the Packers invested money in Bulaga. They've invested big money in Bakhtiari, and they just invested money in Lane Taylor. They're basically saying our five should be able to handle those four. You know, they've paid good money for those guys. They expect a lot out of them. They don't think they have to help those guys. So this is going to be a real test. I think they play this straight up, and then if someone's getting beat a lot, then they'll start helping. But I think McCarthy's going to be wide open against these guys. I think they're going to try to exploit the fact that Seattle is thin at corner beyond Richard Sherman and Jeremy Lane, and they're going to try to exploit that.
So if you're an opposing team and you look at the five offensive linemen, Bakhtiari, Taylor, Lindsley, Evans, and Bulaga, if you have your choice of guy to go after in the pass rush, where are you going?
Well, you're going to attack Evans, I think, first, just because he's older. He's really experienced, but that's a guy you can probably beat with some quickness. Then you're going to try to beat Lane Taylor after that. I think looking at him, they'll say, you know, he can't handle our quickness. Lindsley, you know, they'll try to get some movement out of him, quickness, try to beat him off the snap. That's really where. But, you know, they're not gonna have a ton of success with Bakhtiari and Bulaga. Bulaga had a disastrous day a few years ago in Seattle, but that was in Seattle and it was on turf. And I think on grass, their tackles will be able to handle the pass rush.
I rewatched the game from last season yesterday, and it was stunning to me how little Seattle could get off the edge. I mean, Bakhtiari was a stonewall. Bulaga was a stonewall. And they didn't even really give up much up the middle either. And the one or two times that they had some success involved stunts and twists and things like that. And
which they'll do a lot of.
Yeah, exactly. That's my next point is – and that's another level of communication too, passing off those things from lineman to lineman. So I wouldn't be surprised if they try and do that, move guys all around to try and, you know, test this combination a little bit, because they saw that when they rushed straight up last year, it didn't work. That's not to say it'll be the same on Sunday. Every day is different, but right. I just think you got to try new things.
I do. I'm sure they will, and they'll try to confuse. That's the best way to beat an offensive line is, you know, that's really good is try to confuse them and try to get them on the move so that they have to, rather than just focus on one guy, they have to be worried about the whole area. And so I think that'll be definitely we'll see that quite a bit.
Now, as soon as anybody mentions Seattle, the idea of Eddie Lacy coming back to Lambeau Field is a huge storyline. You know, knowing Eddie, you know, the way that we do, we've been around him for a couple of years. He doesn't seem like the vindictive type, given his personality. But if there was ever a time for him to want to, you know, stick it to somebody, this would be it, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he wants to get all his fine money back for all the times he didn't make weight, you know. So this will be his chance to get it back. I don't know. You know, people make a lot of out of guys returning and what that means. And sometimes there is a guy who just really wants to stick it to his team. I don't know if Lacy's in that category. I know he wants to run people over no matter who they are. I don't think he really cares if it's his teammates, ex-teammates, or, you know, someone he's never met before. I think he'll come. And the thing is that he is not their primary running back. We don't really know who their primary running back is. Rawls is a really good back, and they're going to use him. Procise is going to play on third down. So Eddie Lacy is only a part of their running game. And, you know, to make too much out of it might be a mistake. Maybe they, you know, maybe they need to worry about Rawls and Procise as much as they do Lacy.
Well, on Wednesday it was reported that he had another one of his weigh-ins for a potential bonus. And there was no official yes or no, but when Carroll was asked if Lacy, you know, met the bill by the local reporters in Seattle, he said Eddie's done everything he needs to do. Mm-hmm. So if you believe that as a confirmation, then he's at 245, which is 22 pounds less than what he weighed during his free agent visits earlier this year.
That's amazing.
267. That's amazing. Now, granted, he was coming off surgery, so yeah, it was certainly a sedentary few months for him, but 267?
I watched some film. I watched some tape of their preseason games, and he looked pretty much like the guy before the fat Eddie in Green Bay. He looked like the guy who was, you know, still heavy, but really hard to bring down and could still make some cuts. So that's who they're going to see early on. If Eddie Lacy's going to put on a lot of weight, it'll be as the season goes on.
No question. If he plays, you know, pretty well on Sunday and starts to have some success, do you think the Packers are at all concerned about their ability to tackle him?
Well, they should be. I mean, he's a load. They know exactly what he's done, and they know they can't tackle him high. They can't play like they did against Philadelphia and try to go up high and bring him down. They got to swarm to him, and then they got to get around his legs and somehow get him to stop churning. The thing you want, and this is true with all big backs, get him moving laterally so that he doesn't have a head of steam. If you get him moving laterally, you plug up the middle, then he's gonna slow down. But the other thing is that they're going to be facing a lot of cut blocks, and that is really a pain for defensive linemen to have to deal with those all game long, a guy diving at your feet consistently. So we'll see how they handle that.
Yeah, the one thing that's sort of out there still is that Pete Carroll won't tip his hand on how much these guys are going to play. I was reading some of the Seattle media saying that, you know, Rawls is listed ahead of Lacy on the depth chart, but that's the way it's been all through camp. And you know, Procise, as you mentioned, is probably going to be in there on third down for his receiving ability. But there's been no indication one way or the other what the split is going to be between Rawls and Lacy. But I agree with you. I think at the end of the day, I bet Rawls ends up with more yards than Lacy does.
It could very well be. I asked Carroll, are they going to have a three-headed monster, or does he want to come up with one back? And he basically didn't answer the question, which tells you that they have a plan, but he's not going to tell you what it is. So
it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. Anything else on those topics that we hit on today, or should we save the rest for tomorrow?
The one thing I will touch on was I talked to Ahmad Brooks a little bit about practice and learning the system, and he's an interesting guy. He thinks he can play any position pretty much in any defense. I mean, not cornerback or safety. And he even said defensive end in a 4-3. And then he goes, well, wait a minute. No, I probably can't do that, you know. But he's really feels that he can fill multiple positions for them. Now, it's going to start out as a backup role. But you think about it, he could wind up being a starting inside linebacker for them. You know, he has played inside linebacker. He's big. If Ryan and Martinez aren't giving them what they want, he could very well be that guy who's standing in there with Burnett, or maybe with Martinez or Ryan or what, or Joe Thomas. So I'm really, really interested to see how they use him.
And it's, you know, you mentioned Burnett or Josh Jones, you know, being in that nitro role. When I watched the game yesterday, they used that package a decent amount against Seattle in that game. It was Joe Thomas and Morgan Burnett in nickel, and then Micah Hyde was back there with Clinton Dix.
Right, and they used Burnett to cover Jimmy Graham quite a bit, and it was really effective. We'll see if I'm sure Seattle's completely ready for that and has plans to scuttle it. But, you know, how much nitro can they play if Eddie Lacy's in the game? You know,
that's a good question.
Can Morgan Burnett stand up to that? We'll see.
Maybe they'll throw Brooks in there on the fly, and you'll look like a really smart man on Sunday.
I would not be surprised if we see him inside, even as soon as Sunday.
We'll have to keep an eye on it, and don't forget, we'll have another podcast for you Friday morning to talk a little bit more about matchups and preview the game more in depth. But thank you very much for listening, and we will talk to you guys soon. In a public station, gonna fight, tear it up in a hyper nation.